is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters Radio Show. This session shares one of the three segments of the Franklin Mass School Committee meeting held on Tuesday, December 8, 2020. The meeting was conducted in a hybrid format. Some of the school committee and central office personnel were in the council chambers. The remainder of the committee was remote via conference bridge, along with the community, all to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. I've split the 2-hour and 40-minute meeting into three logical segments. First, covers the opening through the discussion action items, approximately 53 minutes. Second, picks up the discussion-only items, the budget update, the K-1 return alternatives, and the reopening status through the school committee members' comments only. And that's approximately 55 minutes. The third section picks up the community comments on the reopening and then runs through the remainder of the meeting, approximately 52 minutes. They do go into executive session and do not return to public meeting. The show notes contain a link to the meeting agenda and to my notes. The meeting packet folder is also provided in the show notes, which will hold the other documents released for the meeting. And as we go to press, the superintendent's report is not yet updated to the folder. So let's listen to this segment of the school committee meeting of December 8, 2020.
And just to let people know, these meetings are recorded by Franklin TV and shown on Comcast Channel 11 and Verizon Channel 29. We will be adjourning at the conclusion of the regular meeting to go into executive session at the conclusion of this meeting, and will not be returning. And I do need to read our message from the governor. Per Governor Baker's executive order suspending certain provisions of the open meeting law, the public will not be allowed to physically access this school committee meeting. Members of the public can access the meeting via remote conference. And tonight we're going to ask people, just there's a little bit of a technical glitch, to make sure if you want to join the meeting, just click on the link that's on the agenda to make sure. We're just having a little bit of trouble. We want to make sure everyone who wants to participate and to join the meeting is able to do so. Okay. At this time, as per usual with a remote meeting, I will do a roll call attendance. Jen D'Angelo?
Present.
Okay. Tim Keenan?
Here.
Judith Ponfeffer?
Here.
Mary Jane Schofield?
I am here.
Denise Spencer?
Here.
Elise Stokes?
Here.
And Ann Bergen is here. Okay. And as usual, we begin each meeting with reciting the Pledge of Allegiance, and I would like to introduce the young man who's going to be leading the pledge. It is with great pride that I tell you about Akash Jetty, a senior at Franklin High School. He is the senior class president, captain of the mock trial team, and is involved in DECA as well. He is also a member of the tennis team and plays violin in the string orchestra. His favorite subjects to learn about are economics and U.S. history. And in his free time, he likes to listen to a variety of music and play poker. In his opinion, as class president, the class of 2021 has done an awesome job being flexible and understanding during the ups and downs, through the uncertainties of the school year, and is continuing to make the most of their senior year. And it's because of people like you, Akash, because you're a leader, you're helping students get through this, and we're very grateful to you. So we're going to ask you, Akash, if you will lead us in the pledge at this time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for that intro.
Go ahead, Akash. Ready?
Yes. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And at this time, we pause for a moment of silence. Thank you. Routine business, just review of agenda. Does it look okay to everybody, committee?
Looks good.
Thumbs up. All right. At this time, citizens comment. If there's anyone who wishes to speak to an item that is not on the agenda this evening?
Lucas, we have people in the waiting room.
I see Leah.
Yep,
Hallway? Okay. Let me just read.
Or Hoptig Jerry.
Just remind, just before, let me just read the ground rules for citizens' comment so people understand. In the spirit of open communication, the committee will hold a public participation segment about matters not related to an agenda item at the beginning of each regular school committee meeting. The committee will listen to, but not respond to, any comment made. A committee member may add an agenda item to a future meeting as a result of a citizen's comment. The committee will hear public comments related to an agenda item when the chair deems appropriate during the committee meeting. Topics for discussion during the meeting must be limited to those items listed on the committee meeting agenda for that evening. So we ask you, certainly want to hear your comments, but we ask you if you could limit it to no more than 3 minutes. So the floor is yours. You would identify yourself, your name and address.
My name is Leah Warhoftig-Jerry, and I am a Spanish teacher at Franklin High School. And I am speaking after last meeting, and Gail Melko spoke up about teacher workloads. And I've been hearing our superintendent talk about teacher workloads. And I felt that it was time that I decided to tell my story about overwork, which is a little embarrassing because I see my awesome students here at Kosh and Nipun who are just like incredible workers, and I'm so happy to see you guys there, and this is a little embarrassing for me, so my apologies. So I want you to know that we are teachers are working, or I have been working 10 hours to 12 hours a day, 5 days a week, and often I will work 10 to 12 hours over the weekend. This was going on throughout October, and by the end of October, I reached a point where I broke, and I woke up one Sunday morning unable to get out of bed. And the next 4 days, as I drove to school, I sat there and just prayed that a car would hit me so that I could not work. And finally, on Friday, I took a day off, and I took a day off not to go and rest, but I put in 8 hours of work, but that allowed me to only work 4 hours over the weekend. And as teachers, we get many presentations that tell us that we need to refill our wells and to take times to do things. But hybrid and remote learning does not allow us to do that. Every single activity that we used to do, we have to rethink. And we have to figure out how we can make it accessible to our students in an online environment and in person. And it takes just to upload the information for one class for the next day is half an hour. I teach three different classes generally that I have to upload. So just uploading material is an hour and a half of my day. And so my solution right now is, November was great because we would have days off here and there and I'd spend the whole day working. But my solution of this workload is really that I'm going to have to be taking a sick day, not to be sick, but to keep up with the work. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Anyone else? Can you see anyone else?
Heather Adams.
Heather, go ahead. Just make sure you introduce yourself, your name and address.
Hi, my name's Heather Adams. I'm the teacher at Oak Street. And I just have two quick points to share tonight on behalf of many of my colleagues. Firstly, we are concerned with the recent uptick in cases. We are concerned about the claim that there is no school spread evident, especially when most cases are identified in our buildings. Despite the thorough contact tracing procedures that are in place, it's simply not possible to rule out that someone with a positive test result did not become infected in school, since we do not currently have routine widespread testing to identify asymptomatic students and staff. No evidence of school spread has been repeatedly told to us as staff when we express concerns, and it's a claim that does not allay our fears, since it seems that there's insufficient data to back up that claim. Secondly, this impacts the decision to pivot to a remote learning model. It's unclear how or if this decision will be made, given the recent shifts in guidance from the state. Claiming that cases are not spread from school is consistently given as a reason for maintaining our hybrid learning model. I just want to ask the community to consider, are we waiting to return to remote learning until there is school-wide spread? Are we waiting for someone to become very ill, become hospitalized, lose their life? We've worked really, really hard to make remote learning robust, as we were tasked to do at the start of the year. And no, it's not ideal. And there's not a single Franklin's teacher that thinks it's ideal. But with vaccines on the horizon, we know that remote learning is a temporary, imperfect solution to a potentially fatal problem. And those are just some thoughts that I've been sharing with my colleagues. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else, any comment that has not yet been made at this time?
Okay. I think Jessica Kelly.
Jessica, go ahead.
Hi, I'm Jessica Kelly. I live at 674 Pleasant Street. And I have something to comment on, but it's on the agenda, so I'll wait on that. But I do have one additional comment that is not on the agenda.
Sure.
And I want to speak. I've been waiting four meetings to speak up, and I've not been brave enough, so I'm doing it now. I have 2 6-year-olds that are students at Oak Street in the same class, and then I also have a 9-year-old who is a student at Oak Street, and I have 2 very different perspectives. But I do want to speak to something that I have witnessed on other meetings, and that there is a high school representative, or there have been some students that have been so-called student representatives for, I guess, the student body, or how they believe that everything is going, whether it be remote or hybrid. And I just wanted to point out that they, I'm sure, are lovely students, but they don't represent the entire population of students. And I was concerned that the students, who I'm sure are hard workers and do very well, were not speaking up for, let's say, my 2 6-year-olds who are not doing well. In fact, you know, having missed their kindergarten year, half of their kindergarten year, they still don't know how to read, which bugs me, but it's, you know, it's fine. But in addition to the bigger issue is that they are not building a love for learning that I want them to have and that I think that they should have, especially in kindergarten and first grade. And it hurts my heart that they don't love school like my 9-year-old does. And I think that's because we are in a hybrid or we're in a remote model.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anyone else comment that has not been addressed? All set? I don't see anyone else.
Is it possible for us to
what, going to wait after superintendent's? Okay, let's make sure you do after superintendent's. Let's go to Franklin High School student representative comments. Anyone want to just jump in and start? I can't quite see who's
here. Yeah, so I can kick off. Again, my name is Mark Smelly. And so yeah, just to address, you know, a very valid point from the previous comment. Absolutely, I can only represent, I would even say, like, upperclassmen at Franklin High School. And, you know, I'm not capable, you know, definitely I'm not capable of representing, I don't think, underclassmen nor elementary students. And so, yeah, I think that definitely should be taken into account, that what I state here could be completely different for other students. So I guess from an upperclassman perspective at Franklin High School, though, recently we've been seeing, there's been a struggle in teachers being able to provide, like, adequate testing. It's just hard to, like, test, you know, students if some of them are remote and some of them are in person. But I think teachers are slowly getting more and more familiar with it. And then the other observation that I've had for, like, the last couple of weeks is that I've noticed from a couple of teachers that they said the number of students coming in school has been decreasing, at the high school at least. So more and more kids are opting to go remote. But those are my, like, 2 biggest observations at the high school for the last 2 weeks.
Thank you.
Hello, I'd like to add on to that. My name is Nippon.
Go ahead.
Sorry, my name is Nippon Goy. I'm the junior class president here at Franklin High School. And again, building on to the previous point that Akash said, I totally agree. I really can't represent that the elementary and middle school students. And I think that is an issue we may have to address. because they have different needs and different experiences than us. But at Franklin High School, I've noticed many of the similar things that Akasha said. There have been more and more students opting out, I think, due to the rising taking coronavirus cases. But overall, the students there, the safety protocols are still being put in place. There's still heavy contact tracing. Whenever we're in lunch, we have to fill out a Google form to make sure what seat we're at, what time we're at. So I really like how that's going on. Building on just on a positive note, even though I know it's hard to see the positive things sometimes, but our music program is doing great. We're having a virtual concert this week where Akash and myself and the orchestra and band, we've recorded pieces that are going to be played. So things are moving along. Of course, it's not ideal at all, and there are some issues, but those are my observations.
Yeah, I just wanted to jump in real quick again, because Nippon sparked like an idea in my head. I think one big thing we're trying to figure out as upperclassmen is how we can get underclassmen more involved, because that we definitely can see that it's harder for like the freshmen who are just coming into high school to know like what clubs and what athletics and what music programs to get involved with. And I kind of feel that they still haven't found their footing yet, even though it's December. So, I think we're still trying to address that, and that's kind of a problem that we're still facing.
Thank you so much. Any other students on, or just those two tonight?
Just them.
That's very important feedback. We thank you very, very much. Okay. Dr. Hearn, superintendent's report.
Sure, thank you. I have a few things to add to some of the memos that are in your packet, which are some general updates related to things that have been going on, budget update status, date for reopening. But a couple of things that I want to highlight, and a couple updates came from the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education this week. They are recognizing some scheduling and logistical challenges that schools and districts are facing at this time. The original plan was that students in grade 11 would be participating in MCAS testing in the January-February timeframe. Testing for this class in ELA and math is being postponed till later in the year. Students in grade 12 who still need to test for competency determination, as well as adult test takers, remain eligible to participate in one or both tests beginning in January, but we do not have any students in that circumstance here in Franklin. So we were making plans to have students test in grade 11. It would have created quite a disruption to our schedule, given that the students would need to be in person and taking the test remotely, but we are not making those plans any longer because that is being postponed until later in the year. The Department of Education has also extended the testing window for the ACCESS test, which is a language proficiency test for English learners. That is being extended for several months, and we will get the results in the summer. So those are two testing updates from the department. The commissioner has also provided the district two items. One is in the status update, and we can elaborate here in the report as well, that the Department of Ed and the Massachusetts Emergency Management Agency is distributing adult and youth size cloth masks from the federal government at no cost to school districts. So we will get masks, one for each student, at least one each student. They are 3-ply 100% cotton jersey face masks that have antimicrobial treatment incorporated into the fabric. So we'll be picking those up within the next couple of days from a collection site. And so we thank the department and MEMA for providing those to us. It's noted later in the status update, but I'll mention it here again because I have some more additional information. The Department of Ed has provided the district with portable air purifier units at no cost to us. This is using coronavirus relief funds designated to the agency, and this augments the units that have been purchased with facilities. The units have been delivered, and they're being inventoried and scheduled for quick distribution later this week out to classroom spaces, offices that are not going to be getting UV based on, at this time, based on current funding and the project plan. One thing that I wanted to bring up is something that came up at the town council meeting last week. There was a big presentation related to cybersecurity, and there was a spear phishing attack that had been shared previously with the committee and the community on the town side. Nothing was breached. I'll just comment again that nothing was breached in the school department. But it does point out, I think, how vulnerable we all are to cyber attacks, and we're more susceptible than ever given our infusion of technology and our hybrid and remote learning environments. And we are learning of and hearing about school systems that are being compromised. So we're taking every step to prevent that. We had talked at one point within the past year or so about our Know Before platform, which is a professional development and training that people do. One thing that is an added step that we could take that did come up is expanding a cybersecurity position within the expanding to have a cybersecurity position within the technology department. This person would administer and deploy the training program, oversee third-party security, conduct regular risk assessments, continuously update our cyber response plan, and attend required workshops to maintain currency in this field and make sure that we're staying one step ahead of what bad guys are out there, so to speak, how it was referred to last week. So I just wanted to acknowledge the initial conversations that we've had related to a cybersecurity position. The technology department is a shared department between the schools and towns, but the schools have more oversight, and the technology salaries fall within our budget. And so I wanted to bring it up as part of my superintendent's report and note that it'll warrant further conversation going forward. The other item that I have for you tonight is related to tech support. Hearing about some concerns related to technology support, and as we continue forward with hybrid and remote learning, we continue to refine the support of various aspects of our instructional technology. And we have different categories of, I think, needs and issues that need to be resolved, and also different strategies for their resolution. So for example, we may have users who need support within the Google domain. We have users that need support with their hardware. And then we have users that need support with third-party applications. Furthermore, we have users that need support while they're in person in our school buildings, and then we have users who need support remotely from home, whether that's students and families or staff. So the technology department is meeting on a weekly basis with our remote support service. The remote support service is not a one-stop shop. They are not positioned to solve all of the problems that I just identified. And so we're working as a team to clarify who to go to with various issues and various concerns. Right now, the support directions are divided by your location, but we need to further clarify and break down who's going to be able to help with Google, who's going to be able to help with hardware, and who's going to be able to help with those third-party applications. Because support, tech support is currently being provided by four different entities. Our remote support service, our digital coordinators within our schools, our digital learning integrationists, and staff from the technology department. So we're working to clarify those channels and point people in the right direction to get support based on their specific issue and specific need. So I just wanted to follow up with the community about that.
Is that it, Dr. Hill?
That's it.
I was just going to go through the committee and see if anyone had any follow-up questions, comments. I'm going to start with Jen. Anything?
Hi, thanks, Ann. Dr. Hearn, just a quick question. I know in reference to the technology spear phishing or whatnot,
I know that that was relative to not a breach, but a lack of a human error in a lack of process and procedure of checks and balances to ensure that those things didn't happen. So I fully trust Miriam, and I think she's fantastic at what she does. I would just be curious to know what processes we have in place to ensure that there's a two-step approval process on these large transfers to make sure that that piece is not happening for us. And again, I understand that this wasn't a breach and it was human error and everyone makes mistakes, but I think from a management standpoint and a leadership standpoint, it's our job to make sure that processes, procedures, and checks and balances are in place to minimize the exposure of those things. So I would be curious just to see what we have in place for those, process approvals to ensure that we're checking.
Sure, I think that's kind of a big area because it's going to depend on, and we have some processes and approvals that have come forward and we've refined and improved based on some of the feedback that we've had from some of our risk audits. I don't know if you want to jump in now, Miriam, or if we should come back at another point in time to give you a fuller report.
Well, so I'll just
I don't need a report now. That would be my only concern is just looking at what that approval process is, because I do think that that's where a big piece of that liability lies.
I think I would agree. I think it's the approval process, and then I also think there's a training component that's really important because the posers who try to breach our system can be really quite sophisticated. I know that there are situations where my name, multiple situations across a school year where my name is used and can be very, people want to respond when they see my name and see my emails. And it can be really sophisticated and really subtle, the ways in which people try to breach the security and get others to do things that are financially related. So some of it's a training piece, and then having those checks and balances is also really important in terms of the internal controls.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jen. Tim, any questions, comments, follow-up?
I'm okay, thank you.
Okay, Judy?
If there is a new person to be hired for technology, would that be shared between the cost of that person between the schools and the town?
The way we have it set up with our MOU, the staffing of the technology department falls within our budget.
The whole department falls within the school budget?
Yeah, so the whole department falls within the school budget, and at the end of the year, the reporting component, the amount of time that the technology staff spend on town work is taken out of the end of year report and allocated as a whole. Similarly to the facilities department that the town budget supports, and at the end of the year, that piece is allocated towards the schools. But in terms of the cash and the bottom line, it comes off of our bottom line on technology and the town's bottom line for facilities.
Okay, I think I get that. Thank you.
Okay, Judy. And Mary Jane?
Hi. Yes, I am not muted. Just a question, where on earth is the money to support this half-time, part-time, whatever person going to come from?
I think that's a conversation for first the budget subcommittee and then the full school committee to have.
Okay.
All set, MJ?
I guess so.
Denise?
Yes, for the digital learning monthly meetings that they're having, I know that you just brought that up. Is there any way that for maybe, can we flip it? So maybe 1 month it's after school. I know that a few people have reached out to me and they're saying that, 7 o'clock in the morning is really difficult because they're trying to get their kids ready, but they really want to attend. So I didn't know if there was any way we could have these meetings after school.
Are you referring to the parent, DLI? The family support sessions that are offered in the morning?
Yes.
Yes. So the digital learning integration is just for the community's information has been hosting morning sessions. And based on the attendance, it has been low, they have already begun to rework it and figure out a better time that could be more suitable. So that was in the plan. It was in the, on their agenda last week, and we'll put out further communication with the community for other available times to meet. So yes, the answer is yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And then if I could just kind of make a comment. I can't even imagine what would happen right now if teachers and staff only worked their contractual hours, only fulfilled their contractual duties, and only used the resources provided to them. What a different conversation we would be having right now. We're hearing from staff how stressed and tired they are. They need more time to work on planning, paperwork for evaluations. I know right now they're working on report cards. I'd really like us to kind of focus as a district on coming up with some solutions to addressing this problem moving forward. I mean, we just heard from a few teachers, and I know that more have reached out to us personally. And I'm just worried about the staff well-being and stress right now.
Elise, any comments on the superintendent's report? Questions?
I'm all set for now. Thanks.
All set? Good. Okay. Moving right along to our guests and presentations, winter athletics update.
Great, thank you. Joining us tonight is Athletic Director Tom Angelo, who is here to share more information related to the winter sports season, which is being prepared for currently. I did include a little information in your packet related to the winter season, which summarized information shared at the last meeting. The sports season is slated to start December 14th. There are several teams that were moved to a later sports season based on risk, potential risk, and then we are anticipating basketball, swimming, gymnastics, and ice hockey with modifications. And Tom is here to share more about the plans shaping up at Franklin High School, so I can turn it over to Tom, and then I'm sure there'll be comments and questions from the committee.
Thank you, Dr. Ahern. Hi, everyone, and thank you for allowing me to join you this evening. It's my pleasure to provide you with a brief overview of the upcoming winter athletic season. As we are all well aware, this is shaping up to be quite the unusual winter season. As Dr. Ahern mentioned, three of our athletic programs have been moved to different seasons. That would be cheer and wrestling have been moved to the spring season, and indoor track has been moved to the fall two season. We will be moving forward with girls and boys basketball, girls and boys swimming, girls and boys ice hockey, and gymnastics. So that's a total of 13 teams, including freshmen and JV teams. We'll begin tryouts on Monday, December 14th, and this season may run as late as February 19th. As of this morning, we have 252 student athletes signed up for winter sports. The Hockomock athletic directors and principals agree that we would only compete against teams within our league, otherwise referred to as the Hockomock bubble. There are two divisions within the Hockomock League, and we are in the Kelly Rex division, which is also known as the large division. The Davenport is the small division. With basketball, boys ice hockey, we will play five other teams within the Kelly Rex division, both home and away, during the same week to minimize exposure. Swimming will swim against Kelly Rex teams once, and gymnastics will play each team within the Hockomock League once. The only exception to the Hockomock bubble is girls ice hockey, simply because there are only four other girls ice hockey teams in the league. So they will play each team twice, home and away, and they may choose another team for two games outside of our league. So that's how everything is set up moving forward. Regarding practices, coaches will check the temperatures of every student athlete and ask about symptoms consistent with the COVID virus. If any students have symptoms or temperatures over 100 degrees, he or she will be separated from the team and asked to go home, and naturally we will pass this information along to our school nurse. If a student has an exposure to someone who tests positive, he or she will be asked to quarantine for 14 days and must receive clearance from our school administration prior to returning to practice. For any student who has tested positive, he or she will be asked to avoid exercise for 10 days and In order to return, he or she must provide a negative test, be asymptomatic, no fever for 24 hours, and be cleared by their healthcare provider. During practices, coaches are responsible for ensuring that masks are worn properly and social distancing is maintained between players. When possible, workouts should be conducted in pods. The pods consist of 5 to 10 athletes, and these pods will practice together throughout the season. Locker rooms are off limits for basketball and hockey. They may, however, be used as restrooms and swimming. The locker room must be at 50% capacity. All seats for athletes will be 6 feet apart, practices and games, and at least 20 feet away from any spectators. Students are expected to bring their own personal gym bag containing extra masks, hand sanitizers, wipes, and towels. Handshakes are gone. There's no handshaking, no high fives, no reaching down to help someone up off the floor. Any type of that's all done this year. Unfortunately, no handshakes after the game either. Masks will be worn during all practices and games, and mask breaks will be allowed for drinking and breathing comfort, but only in designated areas. Continuous use of hand sanitizer every time someone goes on or off the court or ice or mat is required, and ventilation has to be optimized wherever we are. For practices, for swimming practice held at the Franklin YMCA, there can only be 12 swimmers in the pool at one time and 2 in each lane. Masks are only allowed off when the athlete is in the water. For gymnastics, practices that are held at Flipside Gymnastics in Medway, masks will be worn throughout the practice unless a gymnast is performing. And once again, continuous hand sanitizing, wiping down of equipment, and gymnasts will be socially distant throughout practice. When we are traveling to away games, we will have a maximum of 25 on a bus that usually seats 77. And this 25 includes athletes and coaches. On smaller buses, the buses that seat 71, the number is reduced to 23. Coaches will assign a seating chart for their teams, and each student will sit in the same seat for the duration of the season. Every team will depart immediately following their games. It's right off the court, right onto the bus, right out of the pool, right onto the bus, or into the locker room change, into their warm clothes, and onto the bus. Once student athletes and coaches arrive back at Franklin High School, they will not be allowed to re-enter the building. They have to jump in their cars, or hopefully their parents will be waiting for them, and off they go. For home basketball games, the Hockomock is allowing home spectators only, and that would be that will be 2 parents and 1 sibling per player. Each person will complete the necessary contact tracing information, scanning a QR code, or writing down information on a pad prior to entering the gym. Athletes will sit on bleachers or chairs 6 feet apart, and parents will sit on the other side of the gym, grouped by families, and they will be socially distant. Typically, for basketball, we hold 3 consecutive games. The freshmen begin at 3:30, JV at 5:15, and varsity at 7. Following each game, the gym will be cleared. The custodians will come in, they will spray, they will sanitize. Everything will have to dry before we allow the next teams in, and then spectators as well. Franklin TV is planning to live stream every varsity basketball game. With regard to ice hockey, there will be no spectators allowed at the Franklin rink. The athletes will be sitting on the first 2 rows of the bleachers, which makes it impossible to accommodate the mandatory 20 feet of space between spectators and players. All games will be viewed on Live Barn, and Franklin TV also plans to live stream all of the varsity games. For swimming, we use Milford Pool for our home meets. Similar to ice hockey, there will be no spectators. Swimmers will be assigned seats up in the bleachers, which usually is the area the spectators sit. And instead of staying down on the deck, they will be separated between the deck and the bleachers. Teams will sit opposite sides of the pool and socially distance. And as always, 6 feet apart, wearing masks the entire time, except for when they are in the pool. Some meets will be in person and some meets will be virtual. For gymnastics meets, we will use All Around Gymnastics Academy in Plainville for our meets. And again, no spectators. Meets may be in person or virtual. And with regard to rule modifications for each sport, I can go on for another hour explaining rule modifications. I think I can summarize best by just stating that every rule is in place to increase the amount of separation between players, coaches, and officials. And I'll give you a couple quick examples. In basketball, there's no jump balls, there's no inbound plays, no inbound plays under the basket. Free throw lanes will remain empty until the final free throw attempt, and no setting up to take an offensive charge. In hockey, everyone is at least 6 feet apart for playoffs. There are only two players who can be in a scrum, and that can only last for under 5 seconds. As soon as a third player enters that scrum, the referee will blow it dead. Again, the whole idea is to eliminate contact. In swimming, there will be an empty lane between swimmers, and those in a relay race, as soon as they come out of the water, they have to exit the pool area. They can no longer stay and wait for their teammate to finish their leg and remain on the deck to cheer on their teammates. So those are a couple examples. I know I flew through this, but at this time, I would be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Sure. Thank you. Thanks a lot, Tom. Let me just go through again, and we'll just, by committee member, each member. Jen, any questions, comments?
Hi, Ms. D'Angelo. First, thank you so much. I really appreciated that report. I had inquired about it, and I'm really impressed with your thoughtfulness and consideration that you rolled out. My question is really just about the fall sports. Do you know how many athletes we have participate in that season?
Not off the top of my head. I can get you numbers.
Just like estimate. I mean, it doesn't have to be. I was just curious. About the same? Like, are our numbers looking about the same? Or?
Well, in soccer, about 120 soccer players, another 50 field hockey players. Cross country was quite a bit, so I think in rough numbers we had a lot more in the fall simply because we had more teams.
Okay, perfect. And we felt that the mitigation strategies worked for us, and we were able to have successful seasons for all those sports.
We did.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jen. Tim.
Just. Thanks for the presentation. Thanks for the thoughtfulness on all the rule changes and approaches for running practices and games.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. Judy?
Ditto from me. Thank you for a very comprehensive report on school sports. Thank you.
Thanks, Judy. Thank you. MJ?
Yes, Tom, thank you. I, as everyone else said, with all the rules modifications coming up for basketball and hockey, I read through them and it was like, what's this going to look like? But I was saying the same thing about soccer and, the sports that were played, in the fall. And I thank you now for, a successful fall fall season, and really look forward to hearing about more success of the Franklin athletes in the winter season, which has always been really, really good.
We certainly have been. Thank you. And I tell you, I have to, all the credit goes to the coaches. We have incredible coaches here at Franklin. We are so fortunate. And regardless of the rules, we're playing the games. The kids are thrilled to be back on the courts, on the ice, on the field. And we're going to make the best of it. And the coaches are going into these seasons with very positive attitudes, which makes all the difference. So we're ready for another great season here.
Thanks, MJ. Denise, anything?
Thank you, Mr. Angelo, for your presentation. I'm just wondering,
Do you foresee any of Governor Baker's new guidelines to affect winter sports?
You know, I held my breath today when I saw the latest announcement, but it does not, at this time, it does not affect high school sports.
Great.
So we're moving forward and we're remaining as positive as we can. We're ready for Monday, and it is what it is, and we'll just play the hand we're dealt.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Lisa? Nothing really new from me, just to echo the gratitude of my colleagues here. Thank you so much for going through the work of putting this together and explaining it to us. I think it helps us really visualize what it's looking like. Thank you.
Thanks, Elise. I appreciate that.
Tom, I just had a quick question relative to sort of a consistent, given what happened earlier relative to a party and kids attending parties and things like that, which can happen, kids are kids. I'm just curious, is there a consistent discipline policy in place and that the kids know exactly what the expectations are and what the procedure is in case there are any violations, particularly around gathering together when they're not supposed to? Are there clear, specific consequences in place? I was just curious about that.
Well, if they don't know now, they'll know on Monday, because that'll be the first item that coaches will address on Monday is, you know, number one, their safety and the safety of those around them. And if you're going to be an athlete here, you have rules to abide by. And it's not just your safety, it's the safety of the team. So we all know, just one outbreak on a team, the whole team's getting shut down. So, we're going to do our best. The coaches are going to emphasize this on day one, and we'll go from there. So.
Excellent. Thanks, Tom. I just on behalf of the entire committee, it's obvious, just like Denise was saying about all the work the teachers are doing and what the coaches and what you've gone through to make sure to keep our kids safe. We're very grateful to you, and I know I'm speaking for all of us. Echoing what other committee members have said. So thanks, Tom.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Discussion action items?
The discussion action before you is related to policy.
Lucas, do you want to?
Sure. This is, we have two policies for second read. We discussed them last meeting, but I'll certainly take any additional questions that may come from the committee. On the first policy is JJEA, which is crowdfunding policy, and the second was GE, which is a telework policy.
Were there any questions on that? I know this is our second reading of that. Did anyone have any before we? We don't see anything to you. So I would entertain then a motion to adopt the following policies: JJEA, crowdfunding policy; GE, telework policy. I would entertain a motion to accept.
I'm moved.
Second. Okay, no further discussion. Seeing none, the vote will come on the motion.
I have a question.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
That's okay. Are these two separate policies that we're voting on?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so it's two votes. I just wasn't sure because it wasn't written that way.
We usually vote each one separately.
We often will vote them all together. Yeah.
So we're going to vote them all together.
Vote them separately or no?
No, vote together, just the two. There's a motion and a second to accept both of them.
Okay,
to accept JJEA crowdfunding policy and GE telework policy.
Since Jen has asked about taking them separately, why don't we do it? I don't know. I haven't heard from anybody about any concerns or questions about either one of the policies. I don't know if Jen has concerns about either one, but
asked if anyone had concerns. Is it Jen, any concern about either one?
So my concern is about the telework one.
Go ahead. Sure.
Well, I didn't want to really discuss my concerns. I just wanted to be able to vote appropriately, but I will though, MJ, I will.
Thank you.
My concern is the liability piece. So there's a liability, there's workman's comp, all of those pieces follow that telecommuting piece. So I do have some concerns around that when we are allowing people to work from home. I know that we did have a process of the year due to the pandemic and due to special circumstances. There were some options for people to apply for
modified or alternate work schedules due to family obligations or medical or a whole array of different, you know, concerns that may have justified an alternate work schedule. So I felt that that process worked well. I think it was a streamlined process. The documentation was submitted to the superintendent. It was reviewed, and accommodations and modifications to scheduling was granted appropriately based on the individual circumstances. So for this policy, I just get a little concerned because it's a little bit more general. And then it does, like I said, that liability of workman's comp and liability in the designated workspace, wherever it may be, does follow us.
Can you speak to that, Lucas?
Sure. I can understand Jen's concern. I would say the policy does outline Franklin Public Schools assumes no liability for injuries to employees that occur in their home workspace outside of their agreed upon work time, or if someone was injured as a result of their work in their workspace, I could see that concern. But there's four or five different clauses in the liability section that try to be as detailed and clear as possible around not being liable for work-related illnesses that may occur during the employee's agreed upon work hours. Assumes the FPS assumes no liability for injuries to the employee occurring in the employee's home while outside of the agreed upon work hours, and is not liable for loss or destruction that may occur in the home. So I think there's some clearer clauses in there, but I certainly can understand. But I would say that if this is applied, I try to look at it like if an employee was hurt at work, I would apply the same kind of logic in that case, trying to just be clear about if they're at home and it's not a work-related injury, it would be treated as such. So that would be my
Jen, does that address your concern, or would you want it?
Yeah, I just think it's gray. I think it's a hard area to oversee.
Okay.
In my own opinion, that's just my personal opinion.
So would you prefer?
I guess my other question is, did we find that there were flaws or concerns in the process we had in place for alternate work assignments at the beginning of this year due to those outlined Leave Act eligible situations?
I don't, I'll jump in. I don't think there were any flaws in the process or what we put in place earlier in the year. I think we were looking for a means to formalize it and you know, kind of cover our bases and set some expectations about what an appropriate setting would be at home.
Does that answer your question, Jen? I can't hear.
Oh, Jen, are you muted?
And we lost volume temporarily, I think.
Everybody's down?
I think she's having some technical.
Oh, okay.
Give her a second.
Maybe not. No, she's
okay. There you
go.
Yeah, we can.
Okay.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure your question was answered. We can certainly amend the motion and go back and vote on each one separately if you'd prefer to do that.
Well, I would prefer to, but I don't want to.
No, that's fine. No, that's absolutely fine. So let's. I'm just not sure we have a motion and a second. So I guess I would have a motion then to amend the motion to just vote each policy separately. So I'm going to have a motion to ask for a motion to vote on JJEA crowdfunding policy. Is there a motion to vote on a motion for to adopt JJEA crowdfunding policy?
So moved.
And a second? Okay, so let's vote on that one separately. So I'll do a roll call vote on that one. Jen?
Yes.
Tim?
Yes.
Judy?
Yes.
Mary Jane Schofield?
Yes.
Denise Spencer?
Yes.
Elise Stokes?
Yes.
And Ann Bergen, motion carries. And now let's vote on a motion. I would ask, entertain a motion to adopt policy GE telework. And entertain a motion for that policy.
So moved.
And seconded. A second. Okay. Any further discussion? All right. Seeing none, the vote will come on that motion. Jen?
No.
Okay. Tim?
Yes.
Judy?
Yes.
MJ?
Yes.
Denise?
Yes.
Elise?
Yes.
And Anne, yes. Carrie, 6-1. Thank you.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. You can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.